So the origin of the Hebrew people and the origin of the whole biblical narrative lies in Ur. People would know this. Now, scholars of the ancient Near East and scholars who specialize in the connection between the ancient Near East and the biblical narrative have engaged in a very long debate. There are many dissertations about this, many scholarly articles. Is the Ur in the Abraham narrative the same as the famous Ur of Sumer? And there are many opinions about this. Some feel that a different Ur, a more northern Ur, is being referred to because the Ur of the Sumerians is in the south of Iraq. But the Abraham story, with its other geographical references, seem to refer to the north of that country. So the scholarly consensus is that there is none in this case. We don't know. But as often with the reaction to this material, what's important is how the public feels. The public being the educated reading public that first encountered these texts. And I've mentioned a number of times one of my culture heroes, Sir Leonard Woolley, the great British archaeologist. He was a great one to capitalize on the fame of Ur. He did the excavations there. His excavations had nothing to do with biblical history, but that didn't stop him from telling wealthy donors that they did, that his excavations did. That didn't stop him from making a deal with the London Times to publicize his archaeological excavations as, quote, biblical. And in fact, he raised a lot of money that way. And as an academician involved in the study of the Near East, I must say this still goes on. The study of the Near East is connected in people's minds to the Bible. And that is a reason to study it, even though what you're doing might not directly relate to any one given biblical historical story. So this was the same Ur. To return to our text, so now let us go back to the ancient mind. How are they understanding this text, Enki and the world order? Enki goes to the city of Ur and he blesses it. Well, it's not a city yet, is it? It's the site. He wants it to be a city. Well supplied, washed by much water, may your divine laws be well directed. City whose fates have been decreed by Enki, Ur, may you rise to heaven's heights. Cities and laws go together as categories. In order to have a city, you must have laws. Then Enki visits the rivers, the great rivers of Mesopotamia. He fills them with water, he blesses them, and he assigns their administration to lesser gods. And this is the way the system works in these myths. There's a greater god who takes care of the big picture. Then there are jobs to be done. He designates other gods to do them, gods and goddesses. And but before leaving the river, he fills it with fish, just a few fish, and he tells them to multiply, very similarly to what we read in Genesis, the command to be fruitful and multiply. Then, moving through Iraq, he visits the Sea of Sumer, what they understood to be the sea, what we call the Persian Gulf or the Arabian Gulf, and he assigns a god to oversee that. So he's gone through the country to its natural features and resources, water most importantly, and now he moves on to organize humans. So he's dealt with the divine, now let's deal with the human. And we read in the text that the earth is praised and blessed. Enki made it bring forth abundantly its grains and beans. And he appointed gods to oversee irrigation. Grains he heaped up for the granary. Then Enki added granary to granary. Like with the fish, it's not enough to have a couple of fish. You need fish and you have to tell them to multiply. You establish a granary, then you want there to be many granaries. And you need one granary to supply people with food so they can build the other granaries. Remember my tongues, making tongues idea. You have to have the initial technology, then you build on it. And that's what Enki is doing here. Finally, Enki turns his attention to making cities and the building of palaces and temples within cities.